be more cost-effective. And it's always hard because people like to catch fish, and the more fish you put out there, generally, the better fishing is. But there's some manipulation they can do with size or time of year to make the hatches more efficient. And so that audit, like I said, I have not seen it yet, but I think we came through that in pretty good shape. In fact, with a few good ideas. Yeah,
yes, I went to the Wildlife Board meeting in Salt Lake, and one of the interesting things that came up in the information part of the meeting that I thought we need to keep on the radar is recovery, restoration of Mexican wolves in southern Utah. And apparently, DWR in Utah is opposed to that, but the southern states, so I guess in New Mexico, and that's where it's the reintroduction of that is being proposed. So that's something we need to keep on the in the radar, and it don't sound good to me. But if anything more comes on that, Dale, did I miss anything? Is that just...
No, I think Arizona, from what I heard, was in favor of it.
Yeah.
Arizona Game and Fish, and I don't understand that. But they do focus on southern Utah and southern Colorado in terms of sites.
The thing that kind of made me perk up was when they were talking about that, there's the look-alike clause. If that comes into play in Utah, it goes into Arizona, if we get the wolves migrating from the north to south, under the look-alike clause, they could be protected. So it could be quite an important issue. Okay, there you go.
Okay, as Kevin mentioned, I'm there at Q1 biologist, not on Daggett, but in Duchesne County. And so here we go. This is a presentation on antho, as Kevin mentioned. So first, just some basic information. The current population estimate on the unit is around 1,400 animals. And our objective right now is 700 animals in the winter on the unit. Just some information on the bull elk permits for 2011. There was 28 total permits, and you can see how it's distributed throughout. As far as antlerless elk permits, we've tried to increase our harvest on that unit because we're so far over objective, double. In 2009, we issued 500 permits, and we had 175 harvested. 2010, 500 again, but we had that big snow before the hunts, and we were able to get a lot more harvest. 286. And this year, tags were reduced slightly, and we don't know yet on the harvest. Here's just a basic graph. You can kind of see the blue line is the population estimates over the since 2002. Red line is our population objective, and then I threw on there the antlerless permits, and you can kind of see it back in 2004, 2005, and 2006, even up to 2007, permits for antlerless were reduced drastically. And you can see that what the population did as a result. Some of the concerns that have been brought up about anthro is the hunter satisfaction. For the early limited entry bull hunt, it was at about 2.2, which is out of 5, is pretty low. We've also got the tribal hunting, which is a concern because it's basically a general season for them. And so as we try to manage for an older age class of bulls, they're able to harvest them, and it's hard to get to that objective. Another issue is we have open bull units to the north, and the south has got a proposal during this round of racks for the southeast region to make the Range Creek unit a general open bull unit also. So it'd be kind of surrounded by open bull units. And migration of the elk off the unit, I'll get to that in a minute. And then, as many of you know, we've got the oil and gas development, which is booming out there at the current time, and then population objective, and there's also been a pretty fair amount of bulls being poached lately. So because of all the concerns of anthro, this past winter we started an elk collaring study on the unit. In February we captured 40 cow elk. We collared them with 20 of them with VHF and 20 with GPS collars. And we spread them out across the entire unit where there were elk, and we have them collared. And then the GPS collars, after 2 years, will drop off the elk. We have an explosive device that will drop it. And then at that point, we can gather those collars and receive the data for those 2 years. And we'll have 3 GPS points for each day. And so we'll be able to track the elk and see exactly where they go, when, and times of the year they travel. This is a little bit wordy, but this is just for the study. These were our objectives. And we wanted to see how many of the elk that we collared winter on the unit and migrate to other units. And then we also wanted to see if the elk that summer on the unit are winter there as well. We wanted to understand the migration patterns better, and so that we could harvest these elk where we need to harvest them. And then we wanted to see how they use their summer and winter ranges, to see if they change the migration with the increase in oil and gas development. Do the survival rates and compare our classification from a helicopter with the ground and our cow-to-calf ratios. And then see if any of these elk that we have collars on are causing depredation on private lands. There's just a simple map of the dots, the red, the orange, and the yellow. One of them are the GPS collars and one on the VHF, of where we captured them and placed the collars. This blue line here is Highway 191, and you can see this red is the tribal lands. And the blue outline is the actually anthro limited entry unit. So you can see these two way over here. We're collared in the sand wash area. We have the winter out there. However, both of those collars have died since we placed them on, and so we didn't get a whole lot of data from them. So this January, I believe, we'll be collaring a few more elk out there to get better information. That's just kind of basically how they're spread out. And it was a big snow last year in February when we collared them. So most of them are right there on the tribal boundary. Here is the data that we have so far from this summer. This was from two separate flights I did, telemetry flights. And you can see here now is the anthro unit in the red. This is the area where we collared them. And you can see that they've spread many of them on Range Creek unit. We've got a bunch on the Vinequin, some on the Wasatch West, and even one here on the Manti unit that crossed Highway 6 by Schofield. And on this map, it's not shown on here, but up by Wolf Creek Pass, we also have an elk. So it goes to show you the distribution of these elk. It's pretty amazing. The one up by Wolf Creek Pass is 51 air miles from where she was captured. So she covered a lot of ground in a short period of time to get up there. So an update on the study, here's how they were distributed this summer. You can see only 3 elk stayed on the anthro unit, one of which has now died, so we're down to 2 that are there. Range Creek, we had 6, Vinequin 4, and the Kerr Creek 1, that one at Wolf Creek Pass, and then also you can see most of them went to the Wasatch West unit, which is in between Soldier Summit and Strawberry Reservoirs, where most of them are. There's an update on the ones that have died, and also there's been 3 collars that I haven't been able to locate from the air. We'll keep looking for those.
What was the season on the were they summer?
They were summer. That was in June and August, those points. So for as far as future direction goes, currently we've got the limited entry bull unit with an average age of 5.5 to 6, and we only hunt the anthro subunits, its own separate unit. And then we issue analyst permits to bring the objective back, or get the population down to objective. And from hearing from some sportsmen and others, there's some possible options for future, is to make the anthro part of the general any bull unit, which you can see from this map. Range Creek is being proposed to be an open bull general season unit. And this is the boundary of the current open bull unit for the South Slope Yellowstone, which cuts into the anthro unit. And so it's difficult to manage for trophy bulls in this small area when the tribe is also hunting in here. And as you can see from the data, the bulls and cows are traveling all over the place. Another option could be to combine the anthro with a vinequin unit to see if making a larger unit would help. And then also, combining anthro with Range Creek would be essentially making it a local bull unit as well, unless it is not passed in the upcoming board meetings. And like I said, it's difficult to manage a population when they're spread out all summer long across six different units. So we're open to any suggestions that the sportsmen or others may have. And with that, any questions?
Yes. I have a question. You just said it's impossible to manage elk when they're scattered through the summer.
Why is it
difficult? But don't you pretty much manage them during the hunt, which would be in the fall?
Yes. But we manage for hunting in the fall, obviously. But we still manage the herd on a population basis to have our population objective and to meet those criteria.
Right. I guess when you're managing is through hunting, and that's pretty much in the fall. That's why I was curious why you said through the summer, because your management is pretty much usually during the fall as far as your population is in it.
Right.
When you're hunting.
But it's also, we manage the we count the population in the winter, but we also want to manage the area that they summer in so that they're not overgrazing or causing other problems in the summer.
Right.
So it's important to know where they go. But yes, essentially we manage them in the winter, which is when we do our counts. And for this unit, most of our hunts are in the fall and early winter for the cattle.
Right. I guess that's the point I was trying to make.
Right.
You talk about combining these hunts and with management. So where are these out during hunt seasons? Are they still scattered like this? Are they back on the anthro? Are they more over here?
You know, we don't have any calls on bulls, but they're going to know where cows go. You know, they spread out, especially in September, they're going to be looking all over for cows. So I assume we've got a lot of bulls that stay on the unit for the hunt, and then a lot of bulls that leave, or bulls, we could have bulls coming in from other units as well.
I guess so. You think they're scattered as much during the September?
Yeah, October.
They were scattered still in September. I guess that's the question I'm trying to get to. So.
They're starting now. Just last week, I was up on the unit and saw my first collared elk that I've actually seen from the ground. And it was back on the unit. It wasn't there previously. So probably about November, December, they're going to start migrating back on the unit. And then, you know, they're elk. They're going to go where there's not pressure. And I think that's why it's been so difficult to manage this unit. As we've been talking as biologists, elk are smart enough that when they get hunted, like the Range Creek has had numerous antlerless tags over the past few years. I mean, almost every year they go under subscribed and you can buy them over the counter. And maybe that's pushing the elk onto the anthro unit in the winter time where our counts are much higher. But there's just a lot of different possibilities of why the counts are so high. But essentially we have to manage the wintering population and try to get it down to objective, which is proved difficult.
Hey, Derek. So there's in the data, looks like we've got an influx migrating across anthro in the winter, so that, as you're saying, the population could be inflated because of the influx. Winter population from the influx. But then, if I remember right, the objectives on the other unit entry units, they're also over objective too, where those elk are coming.
Yes, every surrounding unit and the elk fed on are over objective also for their winter population. So basically, that region of the state is way over objective on nearly every unit.
But the truth is that we're saying that it's way over objective, but one-fifth of the elk are on the unit
of those pollen.
One-fifth.
Yeah, but we're not trying to manage the way we hunt these animals. We're trying to manage how many there are on the unit in the winter, correct? Is that what we're looking for objective?
That's what the objective is based on.
Okay.
Wintering population.
Okay, so the objective is based on how many animals are on the unit during the winter, so that's different than the way we hunt them.
Because for managing the hunt, it's based solely on the age. And what the average age of the harvest of bulls is.
But it's for the animals, which are based on
that's why you have when you try to hunt animals once in a while, when you start in November, we have hunts in November, December, and even in January, try to target them.
Really, there are two separate problems on this issue. One is the quality of bulls in the fall. A separate problem, in a way, is this, the population objective issue that you're using to identify population, which is migration. That's both issues.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. Now we'll move on to the agenda items, and I'd like to remind everyone that we try to stay with the agenda for tonight. Is there any more comment cards out there? Any more comment? Here we go. Bucks and Bulls. Elise?
Yes.
All right. You're up.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the RAC. Well, I'll be presenting the Bucks and Bulls once-in-a-lifetime season dates. Starting with the deer hunting recommendations. Most of what I'll be presenting, at least the season dates, will be geared around general season. There are a lot of other season dates for limited entry that you have in your packet. If there are questions on any of those, please feel free to ask them. I won't present everything, obviously, or else we would be here for a long time. So I'll just, go through the general season dates and then all the limited entry dates are in your packet. But first, to remind you, next year, 2012, will be the first year we'll hunt general season on a unit-by-unit basis. We have a lot of information on our website kind of to help hunters navigate through that this coming year. There's been a lot of questions that I'm sure a lot of you have already been getting. And please feel free to ask me any questions. If there are some that you're getting that you're not able to answer, I'd be glad to help on that as well. But we do have a lot of resources online that will help people get that. We have a frequently asked questions page of questions that we've been getting that we put up there with the answers so people can use that as a resource as well. Okay, so just jumping right into the general season dates for next year. Really not a whole lot of changes from previous years. We just shift dates to basically have what we traditionally have had as a Saturday open on most hunts. So the archery hunt is recommended to start on August 18th this coming year and then on September 14th. This is a 28-day season, which is what it has been in the past. The muzzleloader season will start September 26th and then on October 4th, a 9-day season, which it traditionally has been. And then the any weapon or rifle hunt will start on October 20th and on the 28th. Again, a 9-day season, which it traditionally has been. We're moving into elk recommendations. Our archery spike bow elk will start at the same date as the archery deer on August 18th and will end September 7th. So that will be a 21-day hunt. The reason that's a shorter hunt by 7 days is basically, as you may be aware, those spike units are also limited entry elk units for those that draw an limited entry elk archery tag. And to give those archers kind of the last 7 days of the hunt so they don't have any interference from spike hunters, we've cut that spike hunt by 7 days. It's also the 7 days closest to the rut, so this would give those archers probably the best time to hunt by themselves on those units. The archery early bird season, again, starts at the same time, August 18th, and runs through September 14th, a 28-day season, just like the deer season. Any weapon elk or rifle elk starts on October 6th and ends on October 18th, a 13-day season. That's how it's traditionally been. The muzzleloader season will start October 31st and end on November 8th, a 9-day season. And then we have the youth any bull hunt, which is statewide on any bull units. Will start on September 15th and then on the 23rd. That coincides with the limited entry season as well. So we have those youth out there on any bull units during the rut, which increases their opportunity of harvesting a bull. We also have a late youth any bull hunt up here in the northeastern region. That's a hunt that was designed to mainly deal with bulls that are primarily on private land during the regular season and move on to public lands later in the year. The region has extended that hunt to be a 46-day hunt, starts September 1st and ends on January 15th. And basically, that gives those youth plenty of time to look around. If those birds don't come on in the winter range, they have that long period to look around. And in the past, that hunt's had about 15 permits in it, so it's not a huge hunt, but it does provide opportunity. Okay, some of the recommended changes for this coming season. There are some statewide changes that we would like to propose. We recommend allowing those who draw or use any bull permit to be able to harvest an antler cell or a bull. So basically, the youth that draw on any bull permit either on a statewide basis or those youth that draw any bull permit here in the region would be allowed to harvest an antlerless animal if they're not able to find a bull. This increases their chances of harvesting, especially for youth who are just starting hunting. I think it's important for them to have that opportunity to harvest. Now, we recommend removing the split from the moose, the bull moose hunt. For those of you that are not familiar with it, right now there's a break in the hunt during the muzzleloader deer season. We're recommending adding 9 days to that season and just running it right through. New legislation has allowed us to do this. Basically, once in a lifetime species, hunters don't have to wear hunter orange, so it would not require the muzzleloader hunters to wear hunter orange. And there's so few moose hunters, it wouldn't be an issue as far as safety is concerned. And then another recommendation is to discontinue the buck bull combo hunt. This is a hunt that's taken place only in the northern region. And the reason this hunt was designed was basically to take pressure off of public land units in that region and move them onto the private land units in that region, which are the any bull units. Since we were going to a unit by unit basis, that will be a hard hunt to switch to that way of hunting, just because the any bull units don't all coincide with the units for the deer hunting, so it wouldn't match very well. And plus, it's kind of outlived its usefulness. If we need to move hunters from one place to the other now that we hunt on a unit basis, we can do that by just shifting the permits. And then the last statewide recommendation is to discontinue the over-counter statewide youth archery deer permits. We put those out there a few years ago to basically allow those youth that didn't draw a deer permit to be able to just go in and buy a permit and hunt archery. We didn't have a lot of takers on that. We sold at most 200 permits statewide. And now that we're going unit by unit, they can't hunt statewide anymore. There will probably be less of an item that people would want. The youth already are getting 20% of the permits on each unit, so they have a chance to draw. I think it will be sufficient since it hasn't been that big of a head item. There's really no need to continue it. Okay, some regional recommendations. The southern region is recommending a new limited entry late any weapon elk hunt on the Pulse Dot unit. As you may know, most of our limited entry elk units have a late and early rifle season. The Pulse Dot currently only has an early season, and the reason for that was most of the elk on that unit would have left the unit by the time the late hunt was on. But they are finding now some bulls are staying on the unit, so they would like to provide that opportunity for hunters to hunt that late season. It does it'll split the pressure, make the early hunt a little bit less crowded, and provide opportunity on the late hunt as well. They would also like to recommend a new manny goat hunt on the beaver unit. That unit continues to be above objective for goats, and to be able to control that population, they would need to harvest some females, and this is a good way to do that, is to have a manny goat hunt on that unit. The last recommendation for the southern region, there's a clarification in the Thousand Lakes boundary. Basically, this is basically just to make it match up with the neighboring San Rafael and Henry Mountains unit boundaries. As we started looking at our unit boundaries on a unit by unit basis, we realized there were some discrepancies between those units, and that the Southern Region wants to clarify that and make a more clear boundary. Okay, the Southeastern Region unit, they would like to change the Henry Mountains bison hunt boundary. for a couple of reasons. The bison have started to show up in some areas down there that are currently outside the boundary, and this boundary change will allow hunters to be actually be able to harvest them legally. And it also clarifies the boundary between the Henry Mountains unit and the reef national park there. Currently, the boundary goes into the park, but it says in the boundary description that you can't hunt in the park. So instead of doing that, we made the boundary of the park the Henry Mountains boundary. Just some clarifications and adding an area where hunters can pursue the bison. The Southeast region is also recommending changing the 9 mile Range Creek unit to an Only Bone unit. Currently, that unit is kind of a hybrid. It's on public land, it's a limited entry unit, but on private land, it's an Only Bone unit, and it leads to a lot of confusion. The Wildlife Board has asked us to go one way or the other on this one, and after meetings with the folks in that area, the region has decided to recommend that it goes to an Only Bone unit. They're also recommending minor changes to the season dates on the Benares Triangle limited entry muzzleloader elk hunt. Basically, this is just last year they had some overlaps with a rifle hunt, which will avoid that overlap. Okay, the northeastern region. This region here is recommending a new bison hunt on the Book Cliffs unit. Basically, this is mainly to deal with some tribal bison that are coming off the unit onto the Book Cliffs unit. So this will be a boundary that's drawn specifically to deal with those bison. So it'll be in the northwestern portion of the Book Cliffs unit, and will not include the entire unit. We will likely in the next couple of years have a bison hunt on the rest of the unit once we get enough older age class bulls that would necessitate that. But currently this is just to deal with those specific bison that are in that area. Another change is the Uinta Basin extended archery boundary. Basically this boundary is going to be restricted a little bit to keep it off of the foothills. Basically this is for a twofold thing: to reduce conflict with the Diamond Mountain Deer Unit. So basically to keep those archers that are hunting late in the season from harvesting bulls that may come off that unit. And then to reduce the harvest of mountain deer as well. So because they were able to hunt so far up the hill, there may have been some bucks that are coming off of high country timber range that were harvested in that hunt as well. And then the last one for the northeastern region is to change the youth late elk boundary. This is that hunt that I mentioned earlier. So this expands the boundary to include a little bit more of the unit. It will provide expanded opportunity for youth and also give the region the ability to address some elk depredation issues as well. Okay, the northern region has some recommended changes. We want to change the Crawford Mountain portion of the cache unit to an Only Bone elk unit. For those of you that are not familiar with that area, so basically this is everything east of Bear Lake, so it's out to the Wyoming border and north to the Idaho border. The Crawford Mountains kind of sit there right by the Wyoming border. This area is not very good elk habitat. Elk have moved into that area primarily keying in on agriculture for what they need, so to deal with that by opening, making that part of the unit an Only Bone unit, it'll get hunters out there moving those elk around and basically trying to deal with both depredation issues and providing opportunities for some elk are there. We would also like a new Any Goat hunt on the Willard Peak unit. This is basically to reduce hunter crowding. They currently have one hunt on that unit for Any Goat, and they also have a nanny hunt. But they need to increase permits on that unit because they have, a growing goat population. But they didn't want to put more hunters into one hunt. So by splitting it, it reduces crowding where they can put more permits that split them into two time periods. And then the last northern region recommendation is to extend the extended archery boundary in that northern region to the shore of the Great Salt Lake. And that's the east shore of the Great Salt Lake. So basically, this is to deal with some nuisance and depredation problems. And this would only expand that in the northern region portion of that extended archery. So as you know, there's a Wasatch extended archery, an Ogden extended archery, but the Wasatch portion is in both the northern and the central region. This only deals with the northern region portion of that. Okay, some key dates for this upcoming drawing. Basically, our big game drawing will be similar to what it was last year. The application period for Bucks Bowl once in a lifetime and new dedicated hunter applicants will be February 1st through March 1st, 2012. Now, those that may not want to apply for a hunt but do want to apply for a preference point actually have until March 8th to do so. And again, those that want to withdraw an application have until March 8th to do so as well. And then the results should be posted by May 31st, 2012. Current dedicated hunter unit choice deadline. So those dedicated hunters that are currently in the program have to choose their unit by January 13th, 2012. And there'll be letters going out from that program to remind those hunters to do that. Okay, shed antler and shed horn season dates. Basically, if you want to go out and collect antlers or horns during February 1st through April 15th, you'll have to go online and get an online course and print out a certificate that you need to have on your person while you're out there doing that during that period. The rest of the year, you don't need anything. You can go out and do it. But during February 1st through April 15th, we require that course. And that's basically so folks realize that time of year is a critical time for big game animals and not to harass them and things of that sort. Dates are when hunters may purchase or sell big game of its parts. These have always been the dates, but we always reiterate them. So antlers, heads, horns of meat and tick and big game may be bought or sold February 15th through July 31st. And then untanned hides of legally taken game may be bought or sold August 1st through February 14th. Those are the dates that were set basically to deal with the law enforcement issues around those parts of animals. Okay, more key dates. Lifetime license questionnaires, unit selection deadline will be due March 1st, 2012. So they'll be sending those out to lifetime license holders and they need to choose their unit by March 1st, 2012. Those who fail to choose a unit deadline, basically you will have to be able to obtain whatever leftover credits there may be. So we would like everyone to try to pick their unit by that time, but there are always a few that don't. And unfortunately, they'll have to see whatever permits are left over and then get a permit from those. Okay, disabled hunters. Basically, disabled hunters, those hunters that go into our offices and provide proof that they're permanently disabled, actually get some extensions for the general season hunts. And these are what we recommend the extensions be. And they don't score very much from what they have been in the past. So some of them are preseason extensions, so this means they can hunt before the regular hunters go out there. And some are postseason extensions, which means they hunt after folks have already done hunting. Archery deer and archery elk basically are a preseason extension from August 13th through the 17th. Muzzleloader deer, again, a preseason extension September 21st through the 25th. And any weapon deer, another preseason extension October 15th through the 19th. The muzzleloader, any bull elk, it's a postseason extension, so they can hunt November 9th through the 14th. And then the any bull, any weapon elk, they can hunt preseason September 15th through the 21st. And they can also hunt this portion of the northeastern region during that late youth hunt as well. The muzzleloader striped elk, they can hunt November 12th through the 16th, postseason extension. And then the any weapon spike elk, they can hunt October 19th through the 23rd, again a postseason extension. That is my presentation. Thank you.
Questions from the right?
Nick, this might not be directly for Elise, but on the northeastern region changes on item 2, it's about the the boundary on the extended Archie hunt, it says that a detailed hunt boundary is attached, and I didn't have one with my packet.
It's a written boundary description.
It's just
written
there. Yeah. Okay, so it's not a map then, it's just...
No, it's just a written boundary description.
Shoot, I can't believe it's been written. Kevin, would it be this same? Would it be this one hell of a sign? I've got pictures.
Yeah. Unfortunately, if you put pictures of all of those boundaries, we would have had a packet that was quite big and what color would have cost that.
That's all I have.
Yeah.
Thanks, Lee.
What's this description here?
Yeah.
And you said, I heard you right, said for the moose hunt, the once in a lifetime hunts.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the hunter orange, that was the reason why.
Yeah.
During the muzzleloader season, that's why they. You weren't able to hunt during that.
That's correct. Yeah.
Legislation, was that last year?
That was 2 years ago. Yes.
Okay, so that muzzleloader hunters at that time don't have to wear hunter orange.
No, they do not. Yeah. Now, muzzleloaders, we did it in the past, we did it last year. You know, muzzleloader hunters to wear orange because there's a set of fire going on.
I have a question.
Yes.
Has there been any other state shown any interest in nanny goats rather than harvest them?
There's always interest. I guess our take on it is, you know, we would rather have our hunters harvest them rather than, you know, give them to other states is usually what we try to do first.
They've been sneaking
on. We will have surplus even when harvesting nannies, and we do have a few places in state that we would like to put them. And we're waiting to pass a new statewide growth plan before we do that.
Any other questions?
Yeah, one more. Linda, the bison hunt, I was curious, how many, is there quite a few bison that are coming over from the tribe?
From the grass dog meets, it's about 200 to 400 depending on the year.
That's right.
We're trying to grow the population on that unit so we can allow for a unit-wide hunt. Why are we harvesting from that specific location? Is it just to manage tribal?
Well, because they do cut towards our objective, and if there are mature bulls in that population, then we should be taking advantage of them and letting our hunters harvest them.
Yeah, it was 2,000
pounds. No other questions? Questions from the audience? Means we have no questions, comments, the rat. Okay, I have Daniel Davis. Could you say your name, Mike?
My name's Daniel Davis. I represent Split Mountain Archers and Bull Hunters in Utah. And we'd like to make an amendment to the proposal by the division for the extended archery boundary here for the Uinta Basin. What we're proposing is to mainly keep most of the original boundaries, but emphasize the issues that we have on the northern end that have an effect on the mountain deer. The changes that they have proposed wouldn't allow the actual extended hunt to serve its purpose entirely, we feel, because the first objective is to manage the deer and elk in agriculture, and then the second was to encourage people to participate in archery. And changing certain parts of boundaries will allow that to fulfill those objectives. The boundaries that we're proposing, which is included in the packet I handed out, has a map and a boundary description. To include the issue with the elk is overlooked also. We're focusing on deer and the mountain deer, but we're not looking at the depredation that needs to take place for the elk as well. And with that proposal, what we're wanting to do is change that buck date, the buck season date, to the middle of November instead of the end of November. So withdraw us taking mountain deer or migrating bucks during the rutting season and focus solely on the resident deer. And so that would wipe out having to worry about the rutting bucks that migrate into this extended season. And that way we can focus on the resident deer. It would encompass the agriculture that was left out on the northern Mazer and northern Ashley areas that would be left out by the DWR proposal, which is holds a tremendous amount of deer and affects the agriculture. But it eliminates still with the state where it doesn't exceed or have the 1 mile extension on any of those canals and creeks on the northern end. So we don't have to worry about getting into the mountain deer and having an effect on our objectives with that critical unit up there. And that's a proposal we'd like to make. Thank you.
I'm not real familiar with that area, but I Kevin was pointing out a canal, so I think it's been addressed. J.C. Brewer?
A little squirt, try to get that down here right here. J.C. Brewer, I'm proposing that because of a continuous, I say continuous over a period of 12 years now, the Buckhead deer unit has been over objective on the buck-to-doe ratio. The 25-year average has been 38, and our target for our objective has been 25 to 35. Our 12-year average has been 38, and our last three-year average is still 36.4. The point is that we split that unit at the divide, at the road, the rifle hunt only, but we're only hunting, only splitting it during, after the deer have mostly migrated. The reason that I was given by you folks for the buck-to-doe ratio on the south side being so high that it causes the entire unit to be over objective is that hunters drawing permits on the Buckley unit choose to hunt the easy hunt on the north side. And there's not enough hunters hunting the rougher, brushier, steeper, more difficult hunt on the south slope. Splitting that unit and requiring a permit applicant to choose one side or the other would resolve that issue. If you don't get enough applicants for the number of tags that you want to sell down there, then that would probably give the people who would hunt it or be willing to hunt it much greater opportunity to draw tags more frequently. Some people have given an argument on that. They think that it would not change the hunter opportunity down there. So it's been compared to the Colorado unit over there, which does split it. I think that's a very unfair comparison in that you look at the population centers. The Grand Valley sits right against the south slope of the Buckcliffs on the Colorado side of the line. They've got almost a continuous population base all the way from Loma, Colorado to Rifle. It's a one-day drive up and hunt it for those folks on that side. But on Utah, 8 out of 10 hunters will hunt the Buckcliff come from the Wasatch Front. That's 4 hours filling the camp trailer to get there. That's not a fair comparison. By splitting that unit, folks, you can probably increase the hunter opportunity for the hunters that are willing to hunt that more difficult hunt. Probably sell a few more tags. Whatever it takes to get a little more hunting done on the south side, a little less hunting done on the north side. Another thing that we discussed on this was a law enforcement problem. Again, that's one of the reasons why I'm not proposing that the archery or the muzzleloader be split, because the deer during those hunts are predominantly along the summit of the mountain. During the rifle hunt, mid to late October, most of that the deer in that unit have decided which side they're going to go off the middle on, they've already migrated. So there'll be very little opportunity to hunt right along the summit. I see no negative effects on the overall deer numbers by doing this, or effect on the farm crops by doing this. We're already far over what I'm told it takes, $15 per 100 does to get an adequate farm crop, or at least 2.5 times that. So I don't see how that would be affected. Let's just, for argument's sake, say that this proposal was enacted and it didn't change the hunter opportunity, or didn't change a man's opportunity to draw any tags any more easily over there. But changing that, putting more hunting pressure on the south side and less pressure on the north side would bring that balance back evenly. You bring your buck-to-doe ratio up slightly on the north side and down slightly on the south side. This number could be tweaked annually to get the pressure that you want on that site to balance that out. Now, we've done this on about 30 units in the state. We've split the units and made subunits to address some of the problems. I'm not in the book first.
Sounds like you know that unit well. Thank you.
I do.
Kenyon Powell?
I'm Kenyon Powell. I'm the chapter attorney for the Mule River Nation Indian Basin Chapter. I'm here to address a situation where I'd like to address the book clips. Last year, you guys voted to lower 100 tabs in the book clips. Well, this year, we lowered it 50 tabs, but we have a management problem. We have inferior deer down there. I propose that the tags that we put away, we start putting them toward a management hunt for the inferior deer. The people don't want to take during this hunt and make us put the tags toward a hunt for them deer. And that way, the deer, the people are just watching, they're just looking at these big 2 points that stand out there, 25, 26 inch 2 points, and they'll be shooting. And all they're doing is eating all the feed that could help out the other deer. And they're tearing up, they're eating everything for the other deer that could be a little better deer. And this way, we can even do it toward a youth hunt. We could do whatever we wanted to do, just do a management hunt. Take out some inferior deer, so the population will help balance it. We're already over-ejective on our deer down there, like we've been talking about. So why not throw some extra tags out there? For that, it'll help with population. It'll also help to run people through the point system to get their points. Some people just want to go shoot a deer. And this is a good way to do it. Take the management and take care of it that way. That's what I propose.
Thank you. Lynn?
Lynn Higley, representing Utah Bowman's Association. We have two recommendations. The first one, the Mule Deer Foundation, the United Wildlife Corporation, cooperative, Bowhunters of Utah, and Utah Bowman's Association jointly propose that the RACS Wildlife Board reconsider the decision to make archery deer hunt 50 unit in 2012. Instead, we would like to see statewide archery come back. The reasons follows. As stated by the Utah Division of Wildlife Resource Biologists several times over the past several years, there is no biological reason to restrict the area the archery hunters hunt. They are allowed to hunt in general season hunting units. The number of hunters that harvest deer with archery tackle are not statistically impacting the buck-to-doe ratios. As determined by the State Archery Committee in 2009, statewide archery hunting is what the majority of archery deer hunters want. Statewide archery may encourage and increase numbers of hunters to start to choose archery. New hunters to archery could allow for less impact to sportsmen rather than just continuing to cut from their numbers. Having more hunters choose a less successful hunt strategy will increase buck-to-doe ratios without the loss of opportunity. Despite the decision to start hunting smaller units with firearms, the majority of the RACS and the majority of the public were in favor of leaving the archery deer statewide. hunting opportunity intact, and it would allow the youth statewide archery opportunity to continue. Recommendation number two, to provide for a longer season on a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, the Utah Bowman Association recommend the following season dates on the Ogden, Willard Peak, Rocky Mountain goat hunts. The early hunt, September 10th, 23rd, late September 24th, October 14th, nanny, October 1st to the 14th. The biologist for this unit has no objections to these dates. These dates provide for a Monday opener, which satisfies law enforcement concerns, and these dates have been approved by the Northern and the Central Racks. Thank you.
Thank you. Harry?
Good evening. My name is Harry Hanks, and I represent the United Wildlife Cooperative. I'd like to thank the RAC and the division for your dedication and hard work with regards to wildlife and the sportsmen and women of Utah. The UWC supports the joint proposal by the Mule Deer Foundation, Utah Bowman's Association, and the Bowhunters of Utah in regards to statewide archery. Also, the UWC supports the division's recommendation for the Nine Mile Creek unit to any bull. In the coming months, we'd like the RAC and the division to consider ways to implement comprehensive hunter management in the newly created Mule Deer subunits. Creating these subunits allows us to manage hunters and deer on a unit basis, yet we have chosen to manage every general season unit for 18 to 25 bucks per 100 does. Between this year and next year, we will have removed 13,000 hunters, as well as the associated revenue. As you know, these cuts don't address our deer, but rather a social aspect of deer hunting. Past division surveys have always shown that the most important thing to the majority of hunters is having the opportunity to be in the field with a tag. We also acknowledge that there's a segment of the population that desires bigger antlered animals at the cost of hunting less frequently. UWC urges the division to come up with a comprehensive plan in the coming months to manage our general season units to reflect these statistics in the 2012 management plan. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mike?
My name is Mike Davis. I represent the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and myself. First off, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation would like to ask the RAC to consider the season dates on shed antler gathering, close that season until April 15th. There's a lot of prime grazed lands that get tore up by four-wheelers. I know everybody says they take an ethics course, but anybody can pass the ethics course on the computer. That doesn't mean they're going to be ethical when they get in the field, so we'd like to recommend the shed antler gathering season not start until April 15th. That's all the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation has to offer tonight. But as far as myself, I would like to support the Split Mountain Archers map that was passed out for the boundary change on the extended season to carry it out. Instead of using 500 North as the boundary line, utilize the canals at the in the Mazer area and to extend the area on the east side to the Green River boundary as it used to be. I don't believe that that's going to affect the Diamond Mountain bucks at all. You close the season, the buck season on the 15th of November. You're going to eliminate a lot of them migrating, rutting deer that's coming off of that area, and that would give us the area around the Green River and those agricultural areas, the Chew Ranch area specifically. That would still leave that area open for extended archery. Thank you.
Thank you. Clint?
Clay.
Clay.
Good evening. Clay Hammond representing myself. Although I am a serious hunter, I approached the RAC tonight as a property owner in the Mazer area. Last year, well, I pushed for several years to change the boundary for the extended archery down off the face of Dry Fork and Taylor Mountain, because it was not accomplishing the purpose that it was originated for, which is to put pressure on the valley deer. My buck-to-doe ratio is really poor all the way across from Dry Fork and the Taylor area. However, the proposal this year by the division, I think, goes too far. It eliminates the Mazer area where I live. We have a lot of resident deer in that area. We've had our haystacks pulled over by deer. We have donated several $1,000s worth of young fruit trees that they've come in and destroyed. And I want to see the pressure on the deer in that area to help reduce the depredation on my property and the surrounding area. I like the boundaries proposed by Daniel Davis and the archery group. It leaves the southern boundary intact. The northern boundary coming from the west along Highway 121, when you get to the Highline Canal where it crosses 121, it goes north and up around, basically stays on the valley side of the foothills, and includes all of that upper Mazer area where we have so many resident deer that cause problems with crops and people's yards, and also create quite a hazard along the roadways. I think it's important, although the pressure isn't as heavy as I would like from the extended archery season, it does maintain some pressure up there on the deer to help keep them pushed out and dispersed and not congregated on my orchard and my property. Thank you.
Anybody that didn't get a comment card in? Comments from the rack.
There was an interesting point brought up by Mr. Hanks from UWC regarding the way we manage unit by unit. As a state considered, I don't know, maybe this goes to Denise, managing each individual unit rather than doing kind of a cover of 1825, but maybe managing more historically, such as the Taylor Mountain. I know that that's been historically very low. So managing for the 18 to 25 may not have any impact with the exception of hunter opportunity decreases substantially. So would it be feasible to manage each individual unit based on historical data as well as maybe foresight as far as we can see?
Yeah, it certainly would be feasible. The only problem you run into when you do that is which unit ends up being managed for a higher buck-to-doe ratio and which unit ends up being managed for a lower buck-to-doe ratio, because everybody's going to want different things. Those that would like to see more bigger antlered animals will want the higher one, and those same people may live on the same unit that the guy that wants 15 bucks per 100 does. So by making things similar statewide, it decreases that tension, I guess, or trying to make that decision. It will be a difficult decision to make which unit is what.
My question is if we have a unit that has historically 7 bucks for every 100 does, and we're managing for 18 out of 25, and we start cutting tags to meet that objective, those tags will never regenerate.
That's correct, but we're not, again, we're managing to have a certain number of bucks for 100 does, not for biological reasons, but for reasons that there are hunters out there that want to see more bucks in the field.
Okay, so what needs to happen to manage a little more biologically? Because although these hunters want bigger bucks, they're essentially cutting themselves down to knees. There's going to be no opportunity to hunt any bucks if we continue to cut tags.
Sure. I mean, yeah. Don't get me wrong. Biologically, it doesn't matter what you manage for 15 or 18. So, but okay. Socially, obviously, it does. You're going to have fewer hunters if you're hunting for 18. So, yeah, I mean, we could look at that. The statewide plan is due for renewal in 2014, and there will probably be a recommendation from the division to actually shrink that objective so it's not 18 to 25, so we can actually increase permits if we get above, say, 20.
Okay.
So, or maybe even have two types of hunting on these units.
Or will it be a general blanket objective across the entire state, or will they break that up?
And likely, maybe it depends what the committee ends up coming up with. I don't feel comfortable. I know the biology, but the social stuff is not going to be dictated by myself. So we'll make some recommendations. We'll let the public that's going to be invited to help us make those decisions struggle with which units end up doing what. And I think that's a better way to deal with it than to deal with it kind of piecemeal, I guess. And that would be how we would like to approach it, is when the plan comes up for renewal in 2013, we deal with it at that time. At that time, we'll have a couple of years of data from this unit by unit, and we'll be able to make a better and more informed decision.
Okay. Thank you.
I think I remember from the board meeting last year, there was actually, I think one of the board members, I think it was Ernie, actually made a motion to, if I remember right, the northern and central regions stay with the, I think it was option one at the time, and then the southern, southeast, and the central, or southern, southeast, and the northeast would go with $18 per 100 bill and the unit by unit, and that motion failed.
Yeah, and even that is so arbitrarily, you know, it's a decision that was made fairly arbitrarily, so there was no public input or anything on it. So I think if we're going to do a comprehensive type management, we need to have all players at the table and then, you know, discuss it and come up with what the consensus ends up being. The division, as I mentioned, knows the biology and will present that. And we do dabble in the social aspects of it as well, so we'll present that data as well. But we can't make the social decisions. It's not, up to us.
Is it going to be biologically advantageous whatsoever? And this is just for clarification purposes, to manage for $18 to $25 if a unit only has consistently had between 7 and 12 for the past 40 years. Would it be biologically advantageous how?
It would not be harmful, but it wouldn't change anything as far as demographics. I mean, we'll have more bucks, obviously, if you manage it. But as far as population growth, it may not change things a whole lot if you have more bucks.
Mitch?
Yeah, I've probably got more questions and comments, but on the unit basin extensions, the Archie boundary that the gentleman talked about changing, am I correct in assuming that it's pretty much just a change down Mazer and then over to the east on the Dinosaur National Monument? Mm-hmm. Is that how I move that?
Yes, it's a green outline that is overlaid above the rest.
One question. Why is the Dinosaur National Monument included? Can you hunt on that? Extended RP, huh?
That's currently the existing boundary line that the state has out, because in the boundary descriptions it excludes Indian tribal lands and monuments. So they just incorporate it that way. Everything along the Green River gets encompassed into this. I choose ranch area, Thunder Ranch area, everything south in the Jensen area, because if you eliminate that, that is too far south to encompass that agricultural area.
So you basically just want off the old map, the old boundary then?
Yes.
if you look, Mitch, on this one, there's a red outline.
Right.
That's the old boundary, and the black one is the new boundary. And so what these guys are proposing is to follow across the northern portion of it, the new boundary, with the exception of the major Ashley agricultural area, and then right down the southern boundary, exactly the way it used to be, the southern boundary, which addresses the issues that we're looking for.
Right? I'm just curious why they wouldn't have the boundary follow the Dinosaur National Monument.
That would probably be the boundary. Just make that eastern boundary.
Because I look at this and I see here they're including monument.
I don't think that matters. All that matters is that now in there it'll say, you know, right, this boundary excluding the Dinosaur National Monument. And that's exactly what they did with the other change with the boundary changes before, so that it'd be more clarified. So either way, you could go right to the eastern boundary, because that's really in effect what we're doing here.
Right.
Is the date change?
What about this guy's fruit trees?
Well, that's
the major part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. See, what that does is it goes up the Highland Canal and then across the Steiner, or the Rockwell Canal, so that it includes all of I don't want to point right here, but all of the all of the stuff.
Oh, okay.
All of the stuff that's in the private land. I mean, it's all private land. Everything that they just encompass. To just include those, that those are valley deer. Those are resident valley deer that they're including, and it keeps them off the dry fork herd and then.
There are hundreds of deer that belong to those canals.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is a really big proposal where they, because it meets all of the everything we're looking for from the division, plus it brings us off those mountain deer. Plus, I like the idea that they cut that buck date to the 15th. Which means they're not going to, you know, any of these rutting bucks that are coming off the mountain that are coming down in that area, it helps to protect them. So, I
got one more question, Mr. Chairman. On this extension, Archie Hunt, is it just pretty much buck permits that you're giving?
No.
Is it buck
permits?
It's
either.
It's either.
So that does help the definition.
Up until the end of November, and then it's go only. They're proposing moving it back to the middle of November because this was really designed to take care of these resident deer down here. You know, this originally was designed as a depredation type hunt. It's been a very widely popular recreational hunt. And so there are people who don't hunt at all until about now because they can go hunt these extended boundary areas and hunt rutting bucks that are in that area. And so this proposal, I think, accomplishes the designs of the division and still allows for the semi-quasi-recreational hunt that really is a management hunt.
Well, there's not much of a change to the map.
Well, it takes off these mountains.
It's on the dry fork.
Mountain areas.
Right. And, but I mean, as far as the division's proposal.
And on the dry, or sorry, on the diamond area, moving those dates back a little bit, keep some of those diamond deer alive that are moving down into the
road. Yeah, right. My point is, it's not much different than the division's proposal.
On this scale, but when you blow that up to the size it actually is, when you're not looking at a top on map, that's probably a significant amount of area. There's a lot of farmers that will be
all the way up to the rock point.
Right, there's a lot of landowners.
This major highway at Mountain Dry Fork.
It takes a new brush creek. This is brush creek driver
3 miles north of the sound.
So it's supposed to be the road.
It goes to Bowl Hack. This is the old one. That was the other.
No, it was
not. I mean, there's a lot of deer that have
been in the town. That's the new neighbors.
This is the
garden spot.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd like to know if there's any thing from the division, if they're okay with that proposed boundary change, or is there something that may cause concern with the division on that boundary, proposed boundary?
That's a question?
Yeah.
I think in general we're okay with that boundary change. I've got a question on Green River though. Is it still a 1 mile buffer?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Basically, the changes
So it only went to the herding corrals.
This is the old boundary.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're going to...
That's the old boundary. It came across the island. Back, right?
If they proposed this to have the diamond mountain deer, it was because of this.
The problem. Not really accomplishing any of that right now.
And now these guys went that back, so it kicks that storm.
So the storm's out. So
if they're coming down in the winter in here, every winter needs to receive the drought in here.
So it eliminates that problem.
Yeah. Last year killed 6 elk, but if you can't be near within mile buffer, mile buffer is created overall. And so
getting away from the bumper, the intention of this hunt is to create a recreational hunt. Not a very strong purpose up here.
We need you guys to step to the mic, please. You know, Charlie, why don't you go ahead? We've got a report. So, one guy, please, at the mic.
The comment I want to make is we've had three tools to deal with depredation in the valley. This was a tool set up probably about 15 years ago. Like Randall said, it's only had minimal effect on removing depredating deer. It takes some, but not a lot. Our other tool was the Ashley Valley doe hunt, which we also had for about 15 years. I'd have to look for sure. We recommended that last spring. It was taken away by a feeder rack system and the wildlife board because people did not want does harvested in Ashley Valley. Our other tool that we still have is landowner permits, and we do issue a significant number of landowner permits for deer in the valley. So those are the options we have. We lost one. I guess I'd like to see this discussion next spring, April, in the antlerless rack, if there's concern about depredating deer in the valley, we ought to look again at that Ashley Valley doe hunt.
So with the 1 mile buffer along the Green River, I'm not real familiar with the area. What was the reason for the 1 mile buffer?
To include the agricultural and the opposite side of the river.
To go on the other side of the river.
So they can hunt on this side of the river because the animals are going to be coming from both sides.
Question, Nick, at least I'm going to have to ask, get straighten me out here. Back on our northeastern region changes on number two, where the boundaries was changed to reduce the conflicts with the Diamond Mountain limit of entry deer. Am I right in assuming that that change is over here by Split Mountain, where the new proposal comes straight south and eliminated all the boundary around the national park?
That's correct.
So in other words, if we go with this new boundary that's being proposed, then that number two would be eliminated.
There may be some of those bucks are coming off of Diamond Mountain that are harvested, yes.
So that change, that would nullify that change then.
Correct.
Number two.
Except for they changed the season dates and moved that back to the 15th so that bucks coming off the Diamond Mountain are probably going to be after November 15th.
Okay, so that's, but as far as the boundary change, that was the change that they were talking about.
Right. So we went east of that dinosaur, that
was the question I had.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, with that date change, we are not recommending a date change. And so that's why we would rather people be able to hunt all the way up to the end of the season and have the restricted boundary than cut the whole hunt short to deal with that one little error. So
as far as the Diamond Mountain deer, if that change is going to be proposed, we've got to have that 15th date with it then.
But that affects the whole hunt. So it just depends what you're trying to accomplish, I guess. And I guess you can't have both. You're going to limit folks from hunting in the rest of the unit to deal with that little issue.
We need to decide at this point whether we're managing this for depredation or whether we're managing this as recreation.
For all intents and purposes, it's not a depredation. They don't harvest enough deer to really make any difference when it comes to depredation.
So this is being managed strictly as recreation.
It is a recreation. Yeah.
Okay, then if it's not being managed for depredation, if we're not making any changes, and this eliminates 90% of the problems that are being proposed, and as state proposal would take care of those problems.
Yes. And that is why we propose it to manage.
Any other comment from the board?
I got a question. How are we going to go about doing this? You guys want to split a couple of things apart and take an issue at a time, or do you guys want to take the whole thing as a bundle?
That was my next,
question. How do we want to deal with this?
I guess I would prefer to go on the issue, taking the issues that...
I would suggest we split it.
Because I have other comments on other issues, but I was wondering, since we're talking the extended archery right now, maybe we just got to deal with that right now.
Call for a motion.
I do have a couple comments, so...
All right.
Just from what I've heard tonight, as far as limiting the antler shed, Mr. Davis proposed bringing back the antler shed hunting, I think, April 15th. No, I don't think that's overall a bad idea, because basically the BLM and DWR, who've done a lot of lop and scatters, who've done a lot of habitat restoration projects in the Butte Cliffs or Browns Park, wherever, basically all over. And how it's been become lately, the last couple of years, we're just creating new playgrounds for all these people to go out there. It was a good idea to do a certificate over online, the ethics course. I don't think it solved a thing. You know, I think it was a good warning, but maybe not tonight, but maybe sometime in the near future, maybe we ought to think about eliminating the ability to go out there early and collect shed antlers. So, also, I would, I'm kind of mind boggled. I spend 2 to 5 days a week out in the Butte Cliffs for part of my job. So I know what deer's out there. I know what things are like. And I see great deer out there. I see crappy deer out there. A lot of 2 and 3 points, and they're big. And I'm not normally one that goes for antler point restrictions, but maybe it is a good idea to have the youth go out and for a year or two and knock some of those 2 points out. I know it becomes a problem with poaching, but that would be a good opportunity for adults to teach their youth.
Brennan, so. I've looked at this pretty extensively from the pre-rat that came up, and we had quite a lengthy discussion about it. The issue that stands right now is we need to open a management hunt on a limited entry unit, which is currently not encompassed in the statewide management plan. What would need to be done in order for that to happen is to actually make an amendment to the statewide management plan in order to allow for that. What we discussed in the pre-rat meeting was possibly putting that amendment in place for approximately 3 years, a management hunt, half of the tags going to youth and seniors, similarly to what they have in place on the Ponsagunt as well as the Henrys. It would give an opportunity to eliminate what some have referred to as trash deer, or, you know, the 30-inch 2 points that I know you've seen down there as well as I have. It's an amazing hunt and an amazing opportunity, and I stand with you on that opening a management hunt on that would be advantageous, an open opportunity.
I would suggest more emphasis on the deer committees. Put a little more emphasis in this on the committees. If they made that proposal, then it would be an agenda item.
I think it would be a good idea, and, you know, DWR can get together, or the RAC, or whoever, and maybe just come up with a whole list of alternatives rather than just one or two. But I think it's something that we need to look at and start working on. The deer herds are, but the quality of deer out there, I really think, has gone more downhill. I'm not saying it's bad, but I've seen really good deer out there, but it's something we need to work on.
Well, we'd all have to agree that going to the unit now instead of the region, we're already made one step towards having a better deer herd. And so with committee work on the big 2 points in the Butte Cliffs, myself, in our area, on the North Slope, a big 2 point sometimes looked pretty good. But,
well, you betcha.
You know, that's
there's nothing wrong with you making a motion that the wildlife board look at management
and look at this. Well, I guess maybe I'd kind of like to get some of the, or Dax's opinion too. He works out there all the time. I don't know what does DWR think also. I hear a lot from the public, and I don't know what.
Well, here's a problem I see. If we dilute our emotions too much when it goes to the Wildlife Board, then a lot of the
the diluted motions go right over the top. If we work on committee, that's the best place to get to start. Of something, you know, issues like this. And Bob, am I wrong? You know, start at the bottom and work up rather than go to the top first.
I don't know. I probably not wanted to ask about committees. Sometimes I think we get too many committees together. But
well, we set numbers. You know, this might be something to look at.
This is something that has to be done kind of a baby step at a time, though. Before we can set numbers or start being specific, there has to be an amendment to the plan. So the motion today would have to read that there's a motion to amend the statewide management plan in order to allow for a limited entry hunt or a management hunt on a limited entry unit. From that point, you determine numbers and you determine dates and tag allotments and things along those lines. Is that correct? Or am I reading into this?
What I'm saying is we consent to the
wildlife. My right. Make a motion.
Right. Well, then let's
motion.
Let's motion.
That
motion
is
done.
Also. Any more comments?
Make a motion if you want to do that.
Okay.
I'll take a motion.
Would you take a motion from me? I move to make an amendment to the statewide management plan to allow for a management deer hunt on a limited entry unit.
We have a second. All in favor?
Would you repeat that again? On it.
I move to allow for an amendment, the statewide management plan, to allow for a management deer hunt to take place on a limited entry unit.
What limited entry
Well, if we're going to be specific, it would be on the book cliffs and tag allotments, but at this point it has to be opened.
Can I ask one? Before we tally the votes, really, can I ask a question of Denise? Would that be all right on management
sure.
hunts? How has that been working in the Henrys and the Ponce of God? Has it been fulfilling the objective down there?
Yeah, but to be honest, on those units, it's a whole different way of management than it would be on the book list. Because we manage those units not by buck-to-doe ratio for the premium hunts, we manage them on age objective. So the way it works is if you get above 50 bucks per 100 does, that's when you would have a management buck limit. It would not translate well to limited entry units because we manage our regular harvest on buck doe ratio of up to 35. So it's not going to be an easy thing to do, and it's really not even warranted. If you want to harvest some of those animals, you could just add more permits and there would be somewhere to harvest it. It's not a genetic issue. I just want to reiterate that. It's just that those bucks are not getting harvested and the other bucks are. So when you get a few missing cohorts in the population like we have we have had very low found doe ratios in the last couple of years, you don't see those 4 points coming through the population. So you end up fixating on those bucks that didn't get harvested that are 2 or 3 points. So this problem will fix itself as you keep harvesting bucks. I guess I don't think there's a need to go that way, but certainly we can find, there has to be some mechanism to set permits or how many permits you're going to set on this management buck permit. And currently there's no method to do that in the statewide plan for limited entry units. So that needs to be worked out. I guess more thought needs to be put into it than just amend the plan to allow for. So how do you set the number of permits for management bucks on those units?
Well, it would have to be based on biological interpretation, I guess.
There is no biological problem.
Well, okay, classification. How about that? Classification basis? Would that be a more substantial?
Like a 2-year-old can be a 3-point. How would you know whether it was a mature 3-point? It's a lot more complicated than I think the general public perceives it to be, and it's probably not a problem overall for the population.
I guess what has been brought to my attention is rack numbers. There's a large amount of people who are seeing a large amount of very large 2-points. And a 3-year-old 2-point probably will never grow to be anything larger than
but
that.
But that's not unique to the book list. There's right. large 2-points on every unit in the state.
The way that it was
so we don't put, you know, management buck permits on every limited entry unit in the state. It's not unique for the booklet.
Yeah.
The reason you see it more on the booklet is it's a large unit with a lot more bucks.
Okay.
So you have a more percentage of a chance of seeing a big tuple, and especially when they're being passed up year after year after year.
Consistently, and yeah. Management hunt would allow for those to be harvested as trophy or whatever. It would increase opportunity, and if we're cutting tag numbers, if we cut 50 tag numbers last year, but we're above objectives, a management hunt would allow for opportunity to open up.
Right. I guess my approach would be not to cut those 50, and some of those 50 would have probably harvested a large too much.
Okay, we need to get on with our agenda. Karen, you want to...
There's already a motion on the table.
Right. You want to clarify that? Does everybody understand the motion that was made?
What happens when we propose this to the board? How does it go from there? Because I want to be really careful. I'm really... against Natlin Point restriction personally, so I hate to really have it go that way, but maybe for just like a special youth. I just didn't know how it would go after this meeting.
None of that can happen until the amendment's made,
that
it was just
motions made,
but if it was,
if it passes, it goes to the board.
Well, and if it's determined ultimately that it's a poor idea on this particular unit, there's no need to implement the hunt.
Now, we can pass it on to the board if we so choose. The board can deal with it. Then, so the motion, is everybody clear with the motion? Clear as mud?
No.
You all right? Motion and second. All those in favor? Let's see, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Those opposed? One opposed? Mitch?
Upstate. Because I'm not really for it, but I'm not against it. I probably need more information on it, personally.
Can I make a comment? Because I'm opposed. Genetically, you're not changing anything. The genetics are still there. It's the age of the deer, and you got to let it mature. There is genetics there. Even if it stays at 2 point and it gets 10 years old, the genetics are still there. But you can't say it's a 2 point and it's going to be a 2 point its entire life. Sorry.
Okay. With that, I call for a motion on any of the other material in the Bucks and Bulls.
I'd like to make motion. I completely agree with Brandon. I'd like to make motion that the Yarrowless hunt start no later than April. Is everyone else, Brandon?
Yeah,
no earlier than April?
No earlier than April. And I'd second it.
You got second?
Yeah.
Okay, should everybody clear on that one? All those in favor?
Yes.
Should answer.
April 1st, 15th.
Is that when it starts now? Are they making it earlier than the 15th of February?
Yeah, I thought it was February.
It's February.
He said April 15th.
Yes.
Right.
Right.
So,
can you clarify finally? I think that there's some confusion. They're proposing that there is no shed antler hunting up to April, right?
No earlier than the start.
Right, so that means, see, right now we could hunt it in December, January if you wanted to. You just have to have the ethics course from February 1st to April 15th. So this doesn't, they're not talking about the ethics course or the shed antler season that now exists. They're saying eliminate all shed antler hunting prior to April 1st.
Isn't that what you said, Mitch?
Right.
Okay. So no shed hunting.
Right. We've seen too much damage out on our federal grounds. So we would like to make the motion that there's no shed hunting before April 1st?
As of December 31st to April 1st, or as of the end of August to April 1st? What are we need to specify the dates on that. Not only that, but I'm sure to be quite honest with you, if I'm walking around in January and I find a shed, I'm going to pick it up. And that would be classified as shed hunting. Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, you would want to do the same thing. Yeah,
don't misunderstand me, because I totally agree with Brandon's point. We're out on federal ground, and we see damages that are being done that are caused.
I understand.
And this is something that's, that's our concern.
That's a law enforcement issue with whatever ground that occurs on. Like, it's Forest Service, BLM, that's more of a law enforcement issue. But damage is caused to the ground.
But when you turn them loose, when they turn loose,
there's
it doesn't
cause all the too, and we can't take away all the hunting. Right. Do you see what I'm saying? I just think that we're taking out a lot of opportunity for the general public who's not causing damage because some people are. And I would really hate to see all the people who are doing it properly lose the opportunity because there's people who are doing it improperly.
The motion stands.
We have a motion. We have a second.
Second.
We have a second.
You know, before we follow, at least I'm a lawyer, but is it going to happen?
We can see what closes. We tried it already in the northern region and ran away from it for lots of reasons. I will elaborate on this unless you want me to, but... it's not only a difficult law enforcement, it does not prohibit people from being out there. And what happened in the northern region is people were out there, they were caching antlers, GPSing them, and then coming back when it's legal and picking them up. So we can only prohibit them picking up the antler, we can't prohibit them from being out there. So only the land management agencies can do that. So what happened in the northern region, and then there's also the private land, public land issue as well. It was a big deal on that issue as well. The law enforcement folks in our statewide put a whole committee together dealing with this, and this is a recommendation that came up. And again, I mean, we can revisit it, but there will still be people out there tearing up the ground. They just won't be picking up the errors. They'll be putting them somewhere else.
So you've had this problem before.
Oh, yeah. We've tried a closure in the northern region for 2 years. And the recommendation that came back from the law enforcement folks there was it's really not helping. The people are still out there. They're just collecting antlers differently than they would otherwise. So they pick them up, cache them, and then GPS them. Walk away and they come back when it's legal and pick them up. So, I mean, it's a tricky thing. We could do it and see how it goes, but it's been tried in one part of the state. It didn't work so great, and that's why we've gone to this approach to try to educate people and make sure that they know that they could harm the habitat, they could harm the animals. Again, people read it and may not. But that's going to happen, I guess, regardless. It's better to educate people than not to educate people. Again, if you guys want to go that route, I'm not opposed to it. I just want to give you some of the background of why it is where it is today.
I think I might also mention that I think there's a large faction of people out there that would be opposed to that, and that's not on the agenda to the public. I think there would be a lot of people that would come to the rack in opposition to that. If they knew that was going to be discussed and enclosed, so I don't know. I've been a wildlife board meetings with the wildlife board. I'm not saying anything against the wildlife board. I mean that, but they made fast decisions similar to that, and they've had to come back and get public comment and change their decision. And I think this would be an example of one of those without getting more public input.
With that said,
my motion still stands.
Motion stands.
I'll still second it.
Second?
The first.
All those in favor? All those opposed?
Opposed, I'm sorry, I was answering a question. And the question was also proposed, is there a specific an opening date and a closing date, or is it just simply it's going to close on April 1st for eternity?
Right. The closing date is going to be changed. Opposed. Motion died. Are we comfortable with the rest of the information that was presented? Do we want to work any of these others in separate motions? Or
do the extended archery?
We do address the extended archery. Boundary.
Should we exclude that? Well, let's take care of the extended archery. This is kind of like school board with district boundaries.
Kevin
has the floor.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to clarify a couple of things. You know, we could certainly limit the boundaries. But boundaries are a tricky business because you try to find the boundary to take care of the management you want, but you want something obvious for the sports group. That's kind of why I set up on the highway there. I think we can lift those canals on that laser. I think that's it. We can lift either of those. I think Mitch Bob would come and found the barn. That's up to you guys. The one thing I would encourage you to do is to, if we remove that 1 mile on the side of the river thing, whatever you decide, I would encourage you to lock it. That's a long way to do it. How can you force someone to turn a mile? There's just no way to measure that. So we pulled that out of our boundary description. So I guess whatever we do, whether we take ours or theirs or some combination, I really encourage you to not use that one. Just, it can't be true.
I'll make a motion. Well, actually, you said you were going to make a motion.
Go ahead. Just a comment to follow that up. I appreciate what you said. You know, I think that this has turned into a recreation hunt, as everybody said. And so, you know, that 1 mile boundary down there on the southern part of it is difficult. So I understand that. I originally felt that that was our way because, again, this is a recreational hunt, so we don't have to like an opportunity down there. But I understand now why you're saying that that's. But I do think that this changes the way that they propose, especially in that winter ashy area, is important. So, with that in mind, this is going to be tough motion. So, I propose that we accept boundaries that have been written with the exception of the change in the ashy major area that's been proposed by the Bohans.
So you want to accept in our proposal, which will include that addition that the
basically it changes that their proposal by the season dates. It allows those season dates to remain intact so that they still have those extra days for opportunity to hunt. They still have that area to hunt, but they give up that 1 mile boundary line.
So basically, is it they're saying their proposal accept the buffer around the Green River? Is that right?
And season dates.
And the season dates. Okay.
If we only go in that eastern boundary of the
So, Kirk, you just accept them, the Ashley, and not the eastern one then. To stay with the original black boundary for the fishing game.
Correct, because I think that answers the diamond.
The diamond line issue. Line issue.
And we don't have to change season dates by that.
but we still get the opportunity to hunt. So I think it's a good one.
I'll second.
So you want to follow the Rock Point Canal up to Ashley Creek and then back down the Highline Canal as far as the boundary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rock Point.
Explain
that to Bill. It's actually written. They have it written there. Yes, that's what I said. Because that already gives us back the dates and all that.
All right. Now we have a proposal. Does everybody put up that? Do I have a second?
A motion.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? It's unanimous. Okay. With the remainder, or do we want to break off anything further? Okay. In Bucks and Bulls.
I make a motion we accept the rest of the changes as proposed by the division.
And a second?
Hurry.
Wait a minute.
I make a motion we accept the rest of the recommendations as proposed by the division.
Got it? All those in favor?
Vote up.
Curtain.
I actually got it. I got a comment. It's not on the motion, but if you vote on that, can I make a comment after?
Well, I'm just making the question on the motion.
Okay, I don't have a question on the motion.
Okay. All those in favor? Yes. Question? Comment?
I just, there's, and I won't belabor this anymore, but, excuse me, we need to move on, but I just wanted to throw out there that I know there's this proposal for state night archery, and that wasn't in the motion, so we're not doing that. But just something interesting, I went through the Big Game Annual Reports, and the percent of a harvest for archery, I know there's just a misnomer out there, in my opinion. Division may even disagree with me, but the archery, there's... they harvest 13% of the bucks that they're harvested. And in my opinion, that's 13% of the impact of the buck doe ratio. And there is an effect by archery hunters on the buck doe ratio. And also looked at the muzzleloader hunters, and theirs is 18% last year, and it fluctuates a little bit, but it's right around there. And you know, there's stay statewide archery, then if they're at 13%, they take 13% of the bucks that are harvested, and if you take muzzleloader hunters are harvesting if they take 13 and muzzleloaders are taking 18, there's not a lot of difference, and so you start to wonder, well, if you go statewide archery, why aren't we doing statewide muzzleloader? I mean, the percentages are about the same. And so the only reason why I comment is because that there's a letter that was sent, and it was mentioned here tonight. And just there's a lot of other things that I've researched with that. I'll just cut it short with that. If that is looked at again, I encourage anybody who's looking at it in the future to look at the percentages and the actual take. Because if you look at 13% in my paycheck, I'd notice that. And 13%, yeah, it's not as much as the rifle hunters are taking, but 18% isn't as much either for muzzleloaders, but if you add them together, and that's 30% of a harvest. And also for archery, there's 2,000, there's 2,500 bucks that are taken by archery, and if you divide that by all the 30 units, that's 85 bucks in per unit on average. And that's, in my opinion anyway, that's
that's significant for a unit. There is some impact. Not like the rifle hunters, granted, but there is some impact. I just wanted to make that comment, and I'm done. I won't belabor it anymore.
Well, you had that coming. You would chair this meeting for so long you wasn't able to.
Yeah, I've said more than that, and I've said in all 6 years I've been here.
CWMU Management Plan, boy. You should have it easy now.
That's why.
Never you. Well, Boyd's getting set up. I want to make a comment. I know we don't address everybody's issues, but we try to, and I've hunted in several different states, and I think that Utah, we're going in the right direction. We had some good hunts, and a lot of them are getting better. And I'm sure if we keep working on the deer herd, they'll get better too. Boy?
Thank you. Good to be with you tonight. I'll be going on to CWUNM and summarizing the management plan and applications that we've received this year for the 2012 season, and then move on to the Landowner Association permit recommendations. Our applications we received, there were 87 CWMUs that were required to renew for the 2012 season. 83 actually submitted renewal application and management plans. Four CWMUs have dropped out of the program. We have one CWMU that the division is recommending denial, and one that we have a split recommendation. So the division is agreeing with all of the recommendations, with the exception of those two, and I'll go over those when I do the regional summaries. We'll have 10 CWMUs that will be required to submit next year, and 15 in 2014. We have 9 new CWMUs submitting requests for CORs for this year, and that will bring us up to 116 total CWMUs for the 2012 season. Which is broken down like this. There's 70 in the northern region, 5 in the northeastern region, 12 in the central, 16 southeastern, and 13 in the southern. It covers 2 million acres of private land enrolled, and 444 private landowners are participating in the program. The CWMUs, there are 104 of the 116 CWMUs requesting buck deer permits. 61 bull elk, 30 bull moose, 13 pronghorn, and 3 turkey. Now, the turkey have, there's a lot of the CWMUs, pretty much all of them, as you can see, have dropped out of the CWMU program for turkeys because since we went over to the over-the-counter sales, interest in that has dropped off quite a bit. This is a breakdown of the number of permits. There are 2,940 total private permits, 488 total public permits. For the northern region, these are the first 5 are new CWMUs for this year requesting CORs. The last one, Junction Valley, is a change. That was a CWMU that wasn't due for a new application. However, they wanted to request a change and change their boundary. In the northeastern region, we have 2 new CWMUs, the Iniquin and the Buckhorn Ranch. Both of them are deer CWMUs. And then there, the central region is the Skull Valley. This is one that we're recommending denial, as you can see there. In order to be a deer CWMU, you need to have a minimum of 5,000 acres. You can see there that they only have 3,749. We asked for additional plot maps. They weren't able to provide those, so we could verify acreage, and that was the acreage that we came out with, and therefore we're recommending denial of that COR request. In the southeastern region, we have 1 new CWMU, and then we have 2 changes. The Mini Mod and the Spring Creek Dodge are changing their boundaries, and they're both deer now. In the southern region, we have 1 new CWMU, the New Harmony. Then the Johnson Mountain Ranch has asked for a change from 27 and 3 to 9 and 1, and also requested to drop their season variance request. Then there's the Alton CWMU. They have management bought new permits. Currently, they are receiving 4 and 1. They're requesting an increase to 5 and 1. The division is recommending that they receive the numbers that they qualify for, which is 3 and 1. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Questions?
All right. I have a question. Can you show me the boundaries of the two different markets in the entire thing?
I'll let the region do that.
I could probably, but I'm going to let them do that.
The Denham Canyon CWU is over in Denham Canyon, South Destroy. You've actually got a map here if you're somebody is specifically interested. The Buckhorn Ranch CWU is located off of Kirk Creek. It's up by Water Hollow, up towards the Water Hollow turn off there. Have you ever been up there? There's a real pretty wide vinyl fence along some fields in that area. Back to the west there.
This one's more than that,
no, it's one I know, basically. That makes more sense. This is the Vanderhoof. Mike Vanderhoof is the owner of that, purchased from the Petrus family and the Wall property. How would it use that Vanderhoof?
Thank you.
No questions?
Questions from the audience?
Comments?
Comments from the app?
We don't have any comments, Carl, from the audience.
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the policy proposed by the division.
We have a motion to accept as presented. All those in favor? That is unanimous. Thank you. Landowner permit.
Okay, this, I'll go over this. This is a brief presentation of the number of permits that are for the landowner associations. The division received 15 applications this year and are recommending approval of all 15 applications. There are no split recommendations. Out of the 15, there's 125 deer vouchers, 4 management buck vouchers, 93 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers from this year's applications. Thank you.
Questions from the rack. What's the management buck vouchers?
That's the down on the Ponsagon where we have the management buck hunt, and they that's a permit that they're allowed to ask for because it's on that unit. They're on that unit.
So that wouldn't apply to any of the other.
No. No, just there. And it's in the management. It's in the statewide management plan.
All right. Questions from the audience? Comments? Dave?
I'm Dave Schubert. I'm the vice president of the Bottom Mountain Landowners Association. We're asking for a variance to the law R657-43. I think all of you has emailed this and you probably received it on your table tonight. We've had this variance for 17 years. It makes it possible to allow each group of landowners to manage their property so that it makes the unit work on dining room.
Okay, thanks. Josh?
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Josh Horrocks, and
I'm considering myself a sportsman, outfitter, conservationist. I hunt, guide hunt all around the world, year round. And everywhere I go, when these animals have value, the people take care of them. And I'm just asking you guys to support what the Diamond Mountain Landowners Association, Dave Shivers has talked about in the variance. Let's not demean the value of this wildlife on these private properties. The outcome can be tremendous if we do. Any questions?
How was it there?
The variance that Dave Shivers was just talking about, the rule is to allow this woman to allow the general public to access the private properties without landowners' consent. The way it's always been, landowners have been able to let who and what they want to own the properties. The Diamond Mountain Landowners Association, Diamond Mountain is a largely private property area. And the wildlife up there is gaining value. The larger the quality has got, the more valuable the landowners' landowner tags became. These old ranchers used to have the mentality of kill all the deer and elk because they tore down the fences and ate their feed that they're competing against their cows, you know. Now that it's become valuable, they've decided they like the wildlife, and they like them.
The wildlife is a resource for everyone. It should be valued to everyone, not specifically for monetary gain, and that's my personal opinion there. But do you believe that the value that you're discussing is monetary specifically?
Yes, it is monetary, and it is proven fact around the world that if the wildlife does not have fiscal value, the people do not take care of it.
How does this differ from state statute, though? Property hostess? Does it just kind of follow the state statute on trespass?
I see more as an American, you have the right to bear arms or direct that private property.
Yeah.
Is that what you're asking? I'm sorry.
No, well, I was just, you know, if you have your private lands posted,
yes.
Does that accomplish the same thing that you're doing?
No, this rule is trying to override that the general public will be able to.
To verbalize what law R657-43-86. Do you can you read that to us, please?
I think what you're looking at, Boyd can correct me.
Okay, by rule, in the Landowner Association, a landowner permit rule, when they take the voucher and they take that voucher and sell it, the landowner or member of the landowner association has to allow a like number of permit, you know, if they sell that permit on their private property to hunt. Now, in what they're requesting, there's also, in that very rule, there's also the very next number down, which is 6, I believe. What I just kind of paraphrased there was number 5. Number 6 says that they can request variance to the RAC and afford it to the Wildlife Board so that they can, that they don't have to allow that like number onto their private property.
Mr. Shivers, I actually responded to your email and asked for a list of the general hunters that you said that you have access to that, by chance.
Give me tonight.
In general.
Yes, in written form and paper form. Last year's was complete.
Okay.
This year's is not yet.
Do you have generally the number of hunters that you allowed on the property last year? An approximation of those numbers?
I'm sorry, I'd be lying to you. It's a large number from all over, not only in Utah, but all over the all over the United States. And the landowners have been very good. Just like this year, one of the landowners up there, he had built his permits for handicapped youth. We had been guided to a place to stay. And that kind of things happen every year. There's a large number on my private property this year. There was eight elk killed by people that just wanted access. They wasn't charged. Seven of them was guided, I believe, and helped take care of their animals and get them out. So there is a large number of public hunters that are hunting on our private property.
Are they required to have an outfitter to hunt on your property?
Every landowner gets to choose that for himself.
Were they required to have a guide to hunt on your property?
Every landowner gets to choose that also. Some landowners will turn them loose. Some landowners will charge if they want the hunting rights for that property. So each landowner has the opportunity to do on his property what he wants to. But if we didn't receive a variance to this rule that states there in the letter, we would have 80% of the hunters on the private property.
I believe the letter says 70%. For clarification. I guess my question is, how many hunters were charged? How many hunters were allowed free reign? How many hunters were required to have a guide? Those all come into effect when you take into consideration the variance of the law that states there will be one tag allocated to the general public for a tag that has a voucher. So that would be important information to have when you consider the variance.
It is, and we keep that on. It's not a perfect record because you're asking 157 landowners to give you paperwork back. It's kind of like when the division asked for people to send a few kids so they can age classify. Some people do that, some people don't. We just know that on our mountain, it's kind of like your backyard. This is what these people hold. And if you tell me that I've got to let these people come on my property, I don't have anything to say about who it is, or what they're going to be shooting, or what they're doing while they're there, I'm going to tell you, I don't want your game. The two tags that I give here is not worth it. I'm not allowing people on my backyard. So it makes the unit work.
Yeah.
And it's a very successful unit, a good unit. But if you tell me that you decide who's coming to my place to hunt and when, or the rule decides
right.
Who's coming, I'm going to say, I'm sorry, I don't want you on my back on barbecue, and go ahead and keep a few elk tags and get the rest of the game off of my property. Just prepare up my fences, bring them no water.
Right, and I can definitely appreciate where you're coming from on that.
I'm just trying to be really honest.
No, I'm just trying to see it from the flip side, from the general public side, because when people come in and they say, well, is this how it's supposed to be, it would be nice to have an explanation of, well, these are the allowances that I'm not going to make. They allow X amount of hunters to come on free of charge. They allow this and they allow that. So that information would just be helpful.
We have a whole packet of letters. Last year was the best year that we had for gathering that data and trying to keep it. There's letters from lots of people about all different people that's done different things for landowners that have done things for people that come to the mountains. But I think the division would probably tell you that when somebody calls and they're having trouble finding some place to go, something to do, but as a board, we take in people and we take in good care of people, then I'm pretty happy. There's always some bad apples that come along and they go away without as good a taste in their mouth. But the diamond mountain has worked really well too. Probably the kind of like that we feel unless somebody knows something about it.
Does anybody? Does the division have any input on the Diamond Mountain variance? Is there any need to change that?
Oh.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay.
Larry, can I
just comment?
Can I give you just a little brief history?
Sure.
When it started years ago, we started out with a couple of with PHUs, which are basically CWMUs. You had a couple of...
Are you lined under there?
Right. So that's a couple of PHUs, and there was two areas, 10,000 acres, you know, and included. And they ran for a couple of years. It evolved, well, some other people, some other landowners were putting in to do some other PHUs. But when we found out, it was going to block it off. And as far as the mountain as a whole unit to work the best, as far as the wildlife, sportsman hunters, and Charlie was the instigator in this. We looked at the division and found out that this landowner association, we tried it and found out it was the best way to go. Not just for the landowners, but for the animals, for the whole mountain, and the sportsmen. So we found out, and like I said, in the last 17 years, we found it better as a whole than these fragmented, you know, PHUs or CWMUs, because it included, to put them together, it included less people. So we found out over the years that it works. So just to be, just the history on it. But they have required us to do this variance every year.
Okay.
And come out.
Any other comments from Iraq? With that, I'll call for a motion.
I move that we accept the variances we have for the last 7 years.
Do you want to include the level net numbers from that? The whole with the variance?
I don't think that's...
Just the variance is all that's involved in this?
The landowner numbers
Different, yeah.
Okay.
Those are tags,
but right. Tags. Yeah.
So we have the variance.
I second it.
In second, all in favor?
Win.
Second. All those opposed?
One opposed. You wanna elaborate?
Just listening to public comment when they come in. Because I work with the BLM too, but I'm not representing them. The public is really unhappy with the access they have to the Diamond Mountain area, and they're really disappointed in the access they have to the ground. They come in and they complain, these are the maps, why can't we get to the ground? And we say, you have to talk to the private landowners. And they're saying, we're getting charged to cross public, you know, on public lands, on public roads. They're telling us we have to pay to get access to the ground. They say we can't go onto the ground unless we hire their guide. So they're restricting the public so much that Diamond Mountain hunt is almost impossible to fulfill.
Can I ask
for the average hunter that's not that doesn't have the money to do it.
If that's happening, they need to be reported to law enforcement.
We reported it to Cam, said, you know, they've got signs on public land roads that say no trespassing. And by the way, they spelled it three S's, you know. They misspelled it. But they're saying, we can't get access, we're being turned away, and they're really complaining about those hunts.
They need to turn that in there. Nobody can
start the cross. Yeah, and they're going up and putting no trespassing signs up. We turned it into law enforcement. And they're really just the average person that doesn't have the money is unhappy with those hunts.
Well, it appears to me that could be something that could be brought up with the county commission and land access. So
thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, we
did need a motion. We did the permit numbers, the overall permit numbers required an action. And so you just did an action on the variance, but didn't address the permit numbers.
Make a motion to accept it as presented, permit numbers.
I second it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Down on the end. You go for it?
Sure.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, are you done? Needing a dirt?
I wasn't done.
wasn't too bad. I've seen worse.
I guess I need to call you.
I'm going to go to the hospital.